If we stay our course and keep inspiring people, we can change the way the world is moving, or the way the world is. And I have seen that in my own family, in my own community, and in the media. I'm going to a restaurant is so much easier. They know how to pronounce the word vegan. They know what vegan means. They don't try to serve me lamb or fish because I say I'm vegan. So if that continues on, I feel positively and I am very hopeful.
My name is Leigh Farnison. My brother Anders and I are on a mission to help 1 million vegans get into the best shape of their lives. We firmly believe that the more healthy and fit vegans there are in the world, the faster veganism will spread. Let's work together to inspire change, spread compassion, and challenge the status quo. Welcome to the Vegan Gym Podcast. Hey, what's up? My name is Leigh Farnison, and I'm the co-founder of TheVeganGym.com. We help vegans lose weight, build lean muscle, and supercharge their health. In this episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Tony Akimoto, the founder of Plant Based on a Budget, author of several vegan cookbooks, and host of the Plant Powered People podcast. We talked about her inspiring entrepreneurial journey from being broke, unemployed, and operating out of fear to pursuing her passion, building a thriving business, and touching the lives of millions of people. We also discussed her top tips for eliminating food waste, meal prepping with a budget, and sharing vegan recipes with your friends and family. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Tony Akimoto. So your high school track coach was the first person who really got you thinking about how your food choices impact your health, your performance, your fitness. Could you go into that story a little bit and share how that kind of shaped your plant-based journey?
Most definitely. I grew up with fresh food in my life in the early part. I was raised by my grandparents while my dad was in the Navy, and my dad was really young. He was a teenager when I was born, so he immediately went to the Navy. I lived with my grandparents. They were retired. My grandpa was a Japanese farmer here in the Central Valley, so I did have that introduction early on to fresh produce. But then when my dad came back from the Navy and I went to live with him, I ate the food that he ate, which was bachelor food. And we ate a lot of processed foods like Hamburger Helper and canned chili and top ramen, mac and cheese, things like that. All delicious, but not great for track runners to fuel themselves on. And at the time, I didn't even know that food was supposed to do anything more than taste good and fill my belly. So when my coach was like, "What are you eating?" I thought, well, that's a weird question. Why is he asking me that? And he suggested that I slow down on the fast food and cut back on the red meat. And I did. And I began to thrive as a runner. And at the time, my dad had already remarried, and both my parents were not on board with this hippy dippy lifestyle. They were just so confused about why God had done this to them and like, how did this happen to us? But after some time getting them on board, they now accommodate me and support me. And although they don't eat as plant-based as I'd like them to, they have made some changes, and I appreciate every step along the way.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'd love to get into kind of your family in a little bit more detail and hear kind of how your journey has affected them. But before we jump into that, I'd love to just ask you, what events did you do in track? I also did track, so I'm always curious.
I've been a distance runner. I am not running as much these days, but I started running when I was 12, and I did distance track, which is more like 400 or 4x4, and I loved it. I then went on in my adult life to run half marathons and a marathon. That one marathon was good for me. Yeah. I know some people are
check
all about
box.
Exactly. They're all about the how much further can I go? But I was one and done. It is tough.
Yeah, it certainly is. I also did cross country, so I was much more of like that longer distance guy.
Yep.
So in track, I would do the mile, 2 miles, stuff like that.
Yes.
So. And yeah, since then I've done some longer races as well. Marathons are no joke, but it's
no.
It feels like quite an accomplishment when you can check that off.
I remember finishing my marathon, and actually that was a really fun story too, because I ran with someone who I got to inspire to be plant-based. And so he was vegan when he ran it with me. And also I was feeling unprepared. So I joined the events Facebook support group, and I saw, I put up a hey, any tips for a newbie marathoner? And someone reached out and said, hey, me and my husband are plant-based. He's just using this as a training run for his ultra, and he will pace you. So he's going to run the marathon and then come back. And they brought me green smoothies and salt packets and all these things to keep me fueled. And I just thought, what a cool community this is, where vegans find each other and support each other through these mental and physical challenges. Because I mean, if you're a distance runner, you know, it's as much mental. You have to just believe in it. Look a few steps ahead and say, I can get there. I can get there. And I can get there too. And to have that support team really made it a special experience. And I remember just bawling when I finished. I was like so proud of myself that I did it.
Cool. Yeah, there's really no other feeling than kind of that first time that you finish one of those long races that you commit to. And you're just, as you said, you just push yourself to kind of tackle, like get to that next stop sign, or like get to the top of that hill or something. You're just kind of willing your way along that race. And you're right, it is, in my opinion, it's a lot more mental than it is physical. So yeah, really cool. So if we could jump in and talk about your family a little bit, I know that your family has some kind of health history that is kind of typical of the standard American diet and way of living. So how has your family responded to this journey that you've taken? You mentioned your parents kind of coming around, being supportive, but how has kind of maybe the rest of your family really embraced this? Has anyone in your family gone plant-based?
Unfortunately not, but I feel like, again, I celebrate all the small steps, and there have been some notable changes. I want to go back a little bit further and explain where we started from. When I first started plant-based on a budget, a primary motivator for me was my family and the very severe health consequences of poor choices. And I don't want to put the blame on them, because I feel like it's systemic. It's systemic. They just did not have the education that was needed to make decisions that would spare their lives, literally. My aunt died of type 2 diabetes. My grandpa died in complications in a triple bypass surgery. He's the one I mentioned helped raise me. So he was like a second father to me. And so it was very close to me, the negative impacts that eating a certain way, a standard American diet way, had on not just the individual, but the family. So that was a primary motivator and where we started from. And so the fact that my family will eat vegetarian with me, eat no meat usually when we go out, they're always looking for ways to support me, is a huge leap. I mentioned how they reacted when I told them that I was going to stop eating red meat alone, not even become the full vegan that I am today. They were just shocked and appalled. And now they're eating, they like the things like Beyond Burger, but they'll also eat lentil tacos with me.
That's awesome. And I was the first one in my family to go plant-based. And even when I went plant-based, I had no idea what veganism even was. It was purely just a health decision. And I read the China study and just really got into the research. And then I watched Earthlings, and that really opened my mind to what veganism was all about. So yeah, it's cool that your family is supportive and willing to do the meat replacements and also have some of these vegan recipes as well. It's really awesome.
Thank you.
So you've been running plant-based now for plant-based on a budget now for 11 years, I believe. Is that
That's
correct?
Right.
So first of all, congratulations on that. When you started plant-based on a budget and you were getting ready to take it more seriously and go into it in kind of a more full-time role. I know that you had basically no money. You didn't have a job at the time. You were kind of saddled with debts, and you actually ended up launching a Patreon to kind of help get things off the ground. And one of your Patreons not only donated money to you, but also some of his business experience. He kind of gave you some mentorship along that way. So he set a goal for you to make $70,000 in a year, 5 years down the road. And I'd love to hear from your perspective, what did that number kind of mean to you at the time? And what were your goals in comparison to his?
I'm really impressed with your research that you know that story. I look back on that time in my life and I'm grateful for how things went down and the mentorship that I had in unexpected places. And I highly recommend to anybody listening who's in a similar transition in their life to be open to receiving different knowledge from different places. This man who helped me, who you mentioned, his name is Paul Schwartz. Paul was someone who was in a totally different industry. He was in the flower business. And I would never have expected this person who I met through swing dancing, who donated a very small amount of money to help transform the way I think about my blog. And instead of thinking about it as simply a food blog, I thought about it as a future business. And I think that mindset shift was so important because it helped me establish who I wanted to be and the role I wanted to play in my business. And I'm now no longer only the creator of content. I manage a team. And I think that that comes from that initial mindset shift early on, that I would be okay letting go of being the sole creator of content. To answer your other question about the goal of the money, I came from not making a lot of money. My first job, I've always worked in the animal nonprofit space. My first job was $28,000 a year. Then I got a different job and I made $34,000 a year. And I had a very long commute with one of those jobs. It was an hour and a half each way. I spent most of my money on gas. Gas was really expensive at the time. And so I was living below the poverty line. And when someone told me that one day they believed I could make $70,000, I thought, this is the most insane thing I've ever heard. But yeah, okay, whatever. And so I feel grateful because I didn't have it in me at the time to dream big for myself. I didn't have that confidence yet. I didn't know the potential. I didn't see the potential. And someone else saw it for me and helped me believe it into a reality for my business, that I could make that kind of money and start a team and not only do that, but stay really true to my mission of helping people eat plant-based. I have not had to sway out of my initial goals with my business to be successful in this space.
Yeah, I feel the same way in regards to that last point. And that's what really lights me on fire every day, to just get up and help people and spread this message of vegan health and fitness. So I love that you're on a very similar path there. And also, when I was first getting started, I had a lot of self-doubts. I didn't think that I could do it. I thought everyone else was better at building businesses. I had no experience. And I also had some mentorship that really changed my perspective for me. So I'd love to hear, how is kind of your self-belief about what's possible for you from an entrepreneurial perspective or just professional perspective? How's that changed over these past few years?
I remember actually Paul Schwartz helped me with my first cookbook deal. I did not make a lot of money. And in retrospect, you know, actually I'm grateful for the opportunity. I didn't have money at the time. I made $3,500 total off of that first book. It went on to sell something like 90,000 copies. So someone made a lot of money. It wasn't me. But in that very, very first experience, of negotiating, my friend Paul, who is still a mentor to this day, he is retired and still a wealth of knowledge. He told me to ask for $500 more. And I remember wanting to vomit doing that. I was like, with my finger close to the button, like trying to press the button, but couldn't bring myself to it. And now it's just something that I do. If I feel like I can add a lot of value to something, I want to see if they can meet me where I believe I should be. So those early days were a lot harder, but I have now built the confidence. It's not always easy, but I try to make sure that I'm being compensated fairly. And that is a skill. That is for sure a skill.
Yeah, it's so important to know your worth and be willing to fight for yourself in that way. So I know you've learned a lot over these past few years with that.
Also, I feel like it's not always transactional for me. There are lots of things I do for free. I love helping animal charities. That's where I started. That's where my passion lies. I also think it's when it's coming from a place of passion and desire to help and something greater than you, money is nice and it's great to not have to think about how you're going to get your food or how you're going to pay your rent. But once you're beyond that, I feel like having a greater sense of purpose is so fulfilling. And, you know, I was thinking about that first $70,000. I still don't pay myself that. I would rather invest in my business and pay other people well than take more than what I need. So I feel like it's all individual based, but if you have that passion and that drive, that takes you so far and it's so fulfilling.
I'm in the same boat. I totally agree. And yeah, just being driven by passion is worth way more than the compensation that other jobs could possibly give you. So what would you say to, with kind of all of this in mind, your whole journey that you've been on, especially over these last few years, as you've seriously pushed to grow plant-based on a budget, you now have 4 full-time team members. What would you say to somebody who dreams of accomplishing big goals, but is having trouble pushing past their fears and those doubts?
Surround yourself with the right people. I remember I was listening to a podcast. I listened to a lot of business podcasts when I decided to do this full time. I had no background in money management and management and business and like even getting my own life together. So I came from a place where I didn't have that knowledge and experience. And so with that said, I tried to consume as much as possible. And I remember listening to this podcast where the host said that a common saying is you are who you hang with, but you are also the content that you consume. And so I started consuming business podcasts, renting audiobooks from the library so I can take in as many different perspectives and pick the nuggets that I could apply to my own job and business and management style. I ended up going back to school. I hadn't graduated from college. I went back to school in my late 20s, graduated when I was 30, studied business and management, and was able to directly apply what I was learning to my business. So if there's a will, there's a way. And again, that passion just drives you, propels you so, so far. And I wanted it desperately.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Passion is really that fuel behind anything that you're going to do. And when you have a strong enough why, you'll run through walls to make it happen.
Exactly.
So I'd love to talk a little bit about one of the really pivotal transition points with your brand. And that's when you were featured in the documentary, What the Health. That was, from my understanding, a pretty serious breakthrough for you in growing your business. So I actually don't know the story of how you got involved in What the Health, but I'd love to hear you kind of expand on that.
I had been working in the nonprofit sector, as I mentioned, and one of the directors of the film was associated with one of the nonprofits that I was working for, and I met him there. I also was friends with his sister, and so through a friend of a friend and an in-between connection, I was considered for my meal plans. I know that they wanted to highlight the affordability and accessibility, or the possibility of both, in their film when being plant-based, and I had just recently created these meal plans that showed that you can eat for $25 per week. It's $100 per month. That's 7 days a week, 3 meals a day. I was showing how you could do that. And I was basing it originally off of the allotted amount for maximum benefits of government assistance, so that even if you were receiving those, you could still be plant-based with my meal plans. And that's the work that they highlighted. And it was such a short piece of the film, but it was also one of the only points of practical application for plant-based living. So they dropped a lot of truth bombs on you, lots of great information. And then there was this little piece with me in it. And it's like, also, if you want to learn how to do this on a budget, you can follow me. And so that was really transformational in my life. And I'm forever grateful for the opportunity. And I still hear from people to this day who 5 years later have just watched it on Netflix and want to make a lifestyle change.
Yeah, that's so cool. So when the film first launched, was there just kind of like an immediate response, or did it take some time for that to start happening?
There were two parts. So I think in June, it hit Netflix, I believe. And then there was a little bump. But then it went trending on Netflix. And I think that happened in July. And it literally crashed my website. There were so many people trying to get on that my website couldn't hold them all. And nobody could get through, which was a really fun, interesting, shocking experience to happen. And it helped me decide my path. At that time, I was still in school. I was trying to figure out if I wanted to turn plant-based on a budget into a nonprofit, because that was where I was really familiar, or keep it as a for-profit resource and be more of, instead of an executive director, which is what I thought I would do, be more of a CEO. And it helped show me what I could do to not be reliant on donors and to have full control over the types of resources I created, and to be the sole decider on everything, which is the route that I ended up taking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool that you kind of had that experience and were able to really get some wind in your sails with the release of that documentary. So you and your husband, Paul, are both successful entrepreneurs. He's doing really cool things in the food industry as well. And you've bootstrapped your way to success without kind of taking outside money and stuff. What advice would you give to other people who are trying to launch their own side hustles or businesses? I know that you touched on mentorship. I think that's really important. Also having a passion. But is there anything else there that you would like to expand on regarding kind of advice to other entrepreneurs?
There was this book that I read early on called Rejection Proof. And I think that resilience is so important as an entrepreneur. There are going to be a lot of times you'll be disappointed in yourself, in the outcomes of certain deals that you wanted to happen that didn't, in your friends who have chosen not to help you, in like a million times. And it's not personal, it's business. And you have to remember that. And I feel like once you build that resilience and read the book Rejection Proof, he's also got a TED Talk and a few other things, it shows you how to just roll with it. It can seem overwhelming and you might want to quit, but every day, if you choose consistency and resilience, you can really make it far. I feel like a lot of times when people choose a different path after becoming an entrepreneur, it was because it became overwhelming, and I can understand that. But if you can endure it, the outcomes can be so great if you just stick with it.
Yeah, that's so true, and great words of advice. I think it's it's so important to just have certainty in this is the path I want to take. And even though I'm going to be faced with adversity, rejection, and all these other things that come up, this is what I want to be doing. And I'm going to stop at nothing to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And I just, I really couldn't overstate the importance of that uncertainty. Because from my perspective, it never really gets easier. You still have lots of really tough days. And it seems like every week there are new problems coming up that you have to constantly work through. And I have earlier on in my entrepreneurial journey, I always thought that was something I'd eventually turn the corner on and no longer face, but it's just, the problems just get bigger.
Exactly. And I think about it in a lot of different ways. I think about the problems that I faced working for people. And now I feel like I get to make the decision at the end of the day. And that is empowering for me. I faced different adversity within the nonprofit sector, or before that when I worked in retail. I was a nanny for 5 years. I did all these other jobs where I worked for someone, and those were all beautiful experiences too. But at the end of the day now, if I don't like something, I don't have to do it. I can pivot and I can make those decisions. And it may feel like, wow, this is really trying in this moment. Let me move in this direction. And I get to make that choice.
Yeah, there's a lot of power to that. Cool. So let's shift focus a little bit. I'd love to talk more about nutrition, meal planning, stuff like that. I'd love to hear, what are some of the best ways that people can share, that vegans specifically can share some healthy plant-based meals with family members, friends? How do you kind of open that door with people? What have you found to be best?
I found that sharing food that's delicious and not making a huge deal out of the fact that it's vegan, just bring delicious food to share, they'll eat it. I have the biggest naysaying family about vegan stuff. They don't like the word vegan. My dad loves to fish and he loves to smoke his meat and all these things. But if I serve him some delicious food, he will eat that food. And I remember one time he said, if you could cook like this for me all the time, I would eat this way. And I was like, challenge accepted. I made him a week's worth of food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, brought it over to his house, and he ate that way just because it was good.
Yeah, I think, you really can't beat just delicious food. And sometimes you insert the fact that it's vegan after they've already eaten it, and you can kind of help shift their perspective there. So when I first went vegan, I was completely clueless. I tried tofu for the first time by just eating it out of the package, and I thought I would never eat tofu again. But I finally learned how to cook it, and it's now one of my favorite foods. I know that when you first went plant-based, you also weren't really sure what to eat, or you were exposed to lots of new foods as well. What advice would you have for new vegans who are trying to figure out the food part of it?
Just keep giving things a try. Step out of your comfort zone. For me, plant-based has been a world of new flavors and textures and international cuisines. I thought it would be really restrictive. I thought, oh, I'm going to give up so much. But instead, I opened up a new world of food. I expanded my palate, and it took me a while. Sometimes, like for brown rice, I would say 10 times to learn to like brown rice. I was used to eating white rice. And there are a lot of other foods that I hadn't tried. I hadn't tried butternut squash or kale. And just repeating it, trying them in different dishes so that it's got a different flavor and a different texture really helped. I feel like I hear that with children a lot too. People try to give their kid a piece of broccoli, and then the kid doesn't want the broccoli, and then they're like, oh, my kid doesn't like broccoli. But if you keep trying it in different ways, make them taste it, like at least give it a try, they'll learn to like broccoli maybe. And that was the same with me as an adult. I learned to like it. And you know, you said you had that same experience with tofu. You learned how to cook it properly. You found the way you did like it. I know that I don't like raw tofu. I don't want to eat a big block of tofu. That's not my jam, but I know other people who do, and that's their jam. But I like mine marinated and or with a like a seasoning packet, lots of flavor. And so, yeah, keep giving it a try. Don't give up and step out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah, great advice. I was actually, it's funny that you bring up the brown rice versus white rice. I went to Chipotle a few weeks ago and we were standing in line for way too long. It was like 25 minutes before we got up to the counter. And it seemed like it was going to be a lot shorter, but they had some like food shortages and stuff like that. And they were just struggling to keep up. Anyways, we were in line for a while. I was with one of the members of our team, and behind us, this woman came up finally to the counter and started doing her order and found out that there was only brown rice and there was no white rice available. And she left. She kind of made a little bit of a fit right there. And then she just left after waiting literally 25 minutes to get to the counter. And I was just like, why don't you just try something new? And I think there's a lot of value in just being willing to try new things and not be closed-minded.
I was closed-minded to start. And I think hearing about how I should would have been should try new things would have been helpful. I've told this story before on my own podcast, but the very first time I went to a vegetarian restaurant, I was told I could order anything I want for free and my friend was going to pick up the tab. I look at the menu. It was a Vietnamese vegetarian restaurant. I didn't know anything on the menu and all I ordered was white rice. That was it. And that was my first time. And now I love Vietnamese food. Actually, that place is one of my favorite places, called Annie Nguyen's. It's here in Sacramento. And if you are ever here, I will take you there because it is so good. But I was intimidated. I had never heard of any of those meals. And also, it was kind of hippy dippy. It was like Limitless Compassion and like all these funky names. It was just outside of my comfort zone. So now I'm much better about it. And I do try things even when I don't like them. I've tried mushrooms 1,000 times and one day I'll like them.
Yeah. Actually, mushrooms is the one thing I'll agree with. Just like, no way, not going to do that.
Yeah, it's hard. I've tried different varieties, oyster, button, portobello, and I just am not into it.
Yeah, I feel like I've given it a pretty solid try too. So I was not the woman coming up to the counter saying, absolutely no way. I've given it a try and it's not my thing either. So I guess that means no recipes that you ever have made contain mushrooms?
There are some, and it's because I work with recipe testers. So I develop the recipes, and then I have about, for each book, 100 recipe testers I work with. And if they say, this needs mushrooms, I'll put it in as an optional ingredient.
But you won't be a taste tester.
I won't like that, no.
Yeah. Yeah, if I taste test it, it's not going to be going in the book. So if everyone else likes it, we can roll.
Yep.
So it's estimated that about 40% of the food that we produce in the U.S. just goes to waste. It goes uneaten. I know you talk a lot about reducing food waste, which I think is a really valuable conversation. I'd love to hear, what are your top tips for reducing food waste, which also happens to save a lot of money?
I've been in this place in my life where it feels good to have a refrigerator full of fresh food. You have all of the best intentions to eat that food. You're going to be healthy this week. This is your week. You're going to make a bunch of salads, and then work happens and your life is exhausting. And then you have to toss all of that produce. So I recommend, if you know you're going to have time to do meal prepping as soon as you go grocery shopping, that's when I would cook everything. But otherwise, only buy what you think you're going to eat. Don't buy what you think you're going to eat. Buy what you're going to eat. And if you want to supplement, go with frozen produce, because that's not going to expire as quickly. And if you want that fresh experience and you thought you were going to make it work, cut it up and toss it in the freezer before it expires. There's nothing worse than throwing it away and just envisioning yourself tossing money, cash money that you earned into the trash can. So that's one. But then also learning how to store your food is important. I know that my husband used to call our house the place where cilantro comes to die, because I would buy it and it would immediately wilt and get soggy. So I started learning how to store it properly. I store mine like a bouquet of flowers. I cut the tips off, I put it in a cup of water, and sometimes I'll even put a bag on top to extend the life up to a week. But I know there are a lot of other things that people struggle with, like avocados and basil and things like that. And once you learn how to take care of each thing that you tend to buy often, it will extend the life and prevent you from being sad. I feel like it's devastating to open up a mushy avocado.
Yeah, it really is. It seems like sometimes there's no way around that, though. You're waiting for it to be ripe, and then you cut it open, it's just like a bad avocado. Am I just doing something wrong?
What I like to do is I buy them when they're hard, and I monitor them daily, and I just go kind of like touch it, see if it has any give. And as soon as it has the slightest amount of give, I put it in the refrigerator. And that way, it'll stay in that firmer, and you can play with it to see which kind you like, if you like that firmer, if you like it really creamy, or even just a little bit soft. I know it's like a banana. Everyone has their stage that they prefer on the spectrum. I know I like a solid yellow banana, but I like a creamy avocado that's got a little bit of firmness. It's not too mushy. It's still solid green. Some brown spots are okay. I'll eat those too, but That's when I toss it in the refrigerator to get a few more days of life out of them.
Is that true if you cut it up as well, or does that really only work if it's uncut?
I leave them uncut, but you can also, this is so controversial on the internet, you can also cut them up and freeze them if they're going to expire, or if you did open it up and it's mushy, you could still toss that into a smoothie later, and it's not a very potent taste. So it'll make your smoothie creamy. And if you have something like a banana, which is very potent in flavor, it'll overpower the avocado, and you didn't have to waste that avocado.
So I've actually never tried frozen avocado before. I've seen it in the grocery store. I've never done it myself or purchased it. So is that really only good in smoothies, or could you actually thaw it and use it on a sandwich or something and have it be normal?
I have only done it in smoothies, and I have not purchased them that way. I have only saved some that were a little bit past their ripeness for fresh eating. But I posted maybe in 2018 or 2019, I had never seen frozen avocados before. And I went to Walmart, and they're like Welch's or some brand, big brand, had frozen avocados. And I posted a picture, and the internet blew up. People had such strong, visceral reactions to frozen avocados. I couldn't believe it. It's one of the most controversial things I've ever done on the internet.
So there are people who are absolutely all about it, and then others who are just like, worst invention ever.
Most people were like, this is the worst idea. How could anybody ever eat a frozen avocado? That was the majority, but there were some people who were like, I love it. I buy them all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess I need to try it before knocking it or anything. So yeah, I'll have to add that to my list next time. So great. I create kind of meal prepping ideas and ideas to reduce food waste. As far as what you do with cilantro or kale or these other leafy greens, you said that you chop off you treat it like a bouquet of flowers. Do you put that in the fridge, or do you just leave it out on your counter? Okay.
I do. I put them in the refrigerator. Just like if you were to go to a florist, they tell you if you want to extend the life of your flowers, you cut the bottom, you put them in a jar of water, and then you stick them in the refrigerator when you're not appreciating their beauty. It's sort of like that. And that's not all leafy greens. some things like spinach or basil, you'll put in an airtight container and put like a paper towel on top of them to absorb the moisture. I don't know if you've ever had spinach get soggy on you. And so to prevent that and extend the life, I like to put a towel, a paper towel or a regular towel on the top and the bottom.
Cool. So you mentioned in a recent podcast, you were talking about stasher bags. And I actually just discovered stasher bags this last year. I'm probably really late to that that revelation. But they're basic, for anyone who hasn't heard about them, they're basically just these heavy-duty, washable, reusable, kind of Ziploc bag type things. So are these, you just basically use them like Ziploc bags, right? For all of your produce and stuff?
I started with a knockoff brand a long time ago. I just went on Amazon and got the cheapest, highest rated ones, which were substantially cheaper. And that was fine. But what I really like about the stasher bags versus the ones that I had before is that there's no clasp that's separate to the bag. They automatically zip up and it's one unit. The ones I had before, you had to slide something over it to keep it closed. And when I tried to boil it one time, because I had frozen a marinara sauce in there, that melted. Whereas with the stasher bag, you can toss the whole thing into a boiling pot of water if you've frozen a soup or something like that, and it'll thaw it out and cook it for you. So then you don't have to worry about anything.
No melted plastic
fire or melting in your water.
Yeah, that's not exactly a good health move.
Correct.
Melted plastic. So I'd love to expand a little bit more on meal planning, because I think that's so important when we're talking about meal planning within the realm of vegan health and fitness and what we do with our clients and stuff. We're mostly talking in terms of just preparing to accomplish your fitness goals, making sure you're not going to grab something that is just grabbed out of convenience or craving or something like that, which obviously is part of it. But also, it's really important to plan your meals ahead of time, so you're going to the grocery store with a plan and you're not just grabbing things that are on sale or grabbing things that look good or something, and you're actually sticking with the plan. So could you walk through how you actually plan out your meals for a week and what that process looks like?
There are a lot of ways to go about meal planning, and I lay a lot of them out in Plant-Based on a Budget Quick and Easy. My preferred way is to do mix and match bowls where I have a protein, a grain, a vegetable, and a sauce. It's very easy so that you can do a mix and match if you wanted to, of home cooked versus like store-bought. Like, let me give you an example. You could do a pot of brown rice that you make at home, and then you can buy a can of no sodium beans and some salsa and some mixed vegetables or something like that. And that would be your meal. Or you can go a different route and do freezer friendly. Like I just mentioned, I had the frozen marinara. You have something that's already made. All you need to do is warm it up and you're good to go. You could do casserole dishes, same concept. There are lots of ways to go about it. Then, of course, there's the one big batch, like one big pot of chili that you eat all week. That is not my favorite. There are ways to get around that to make it less boring by spicing it up differently as you go along through the work week. But that's my least favorite because of the lack of diversity. And also, I just like to eat different things throughout the week. So those are some ways. With meal planning, you set it so perfectly. You don't want impulsive purchases. You want to be in control of everything that you're buying and when you're buying it and how much you're spending. And when you do that planning up front, you have that control. I remember when I was working with that long commute, if I didn't have something at home waiting for me, I knew I was going to stop at Chipotle and grab a $7 burrito instead of having something that cost me $1.30 per serving. So snacks, another thing. I am not a fun person when I'm hungry, and I will make bad decisions. So I have to have snacks in the car. That's another part of meal planning. And then this is a little bit counterintuitive, but I also buy an indulgence item, like a cookie or something, like something that I might impulsively purchase if I'm craving it. I want to be in control and put that in my plan. And you can do things like make protein cookies, or you can make cookies out of chickpeas or things like that. So you can be thoughtful and in control of what you're eating and not go to the grocery store impulsively and buy some Nutter Butters or Oreos or whatever. So I don't think of meal planning as something that has anything to do with deprivation. I just think it's having a lot of foresight into what your work week looks like, make life easier for you and your family, and make sure that you're having nourishing meals and being thoughtful about what you're consuming throughout the work week, while also staying on budget for your money and also for your time.
I completely agree. I think meal planning is all about, hey, how am I preparing myself for success? It's not about deprivation. I'm focusing on success. And I love the addition of saying, hey, what kind of little treat can I fit into my meal prep for this week, or my meals for this week? And I think that's so important. We talk about the same thing through the context of weight loss and accomplishing your fitness goals. So if I want to lose 20 pounds, the reason so many people tend to yo-yo with their weight loss goals is they'll go into a weight loss period and say, this is exactly what I need to eat. I can't eat anything else. These are bad foods, and these are the only okay foods that I can eat. And then they end up maybe being able to stick with that for a few weeks or a few months. But then you're just kind of denying those cravings that are not bad things. We just need to prepare for them. We need to prepare for success. And so instead of saying, I'm not going to eat this food at all, it's how can I incorporate a little bit and kind of scratch that itch for my craving without really going overboard and going and buying all of these foods that don't align with my goals at the grocery store. So kind of very similar.
Yes. I feel very similarly about budgeting. Being thoughtful and preparing will help you save money in the long run, and you don't have to sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's all about. So as we touched on in the beginning, you've accomplished more than probably you ever thought possible from kind of a building your brand perspective. So I'd love to ask, what drives you right now? What really drives your brand and your mission forward right now?
I feel so grateful for every message, for every comment that I hear on my recipes, for every book review, connecting with people and knowing that I'm making an impact on their lives. And not only that, but these are generational changes. They are the parents who are teaching their children eating habits, and then they will teach their children eating habits. And I get to be part of that journey with them. They trust me, and I take that very extremely seriously. I want to be the best I can for them as a resource, and I feel grateful every day that this is my calling.
What are your current growth goals for Plant-Based on a Budget? I know you have a new cookbook coming out. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But what are some like long-term growth goals that you have?
Well, the book has been my full-time job. I have never thought about another book in the way that I'm thinking about this. And it's actually talking to some friends who have had big achievements with their cookbooks that have been inspiring. It goes back to the very beginning of this conversation where we talked about surrounding yourself with people who cheer you on. And for me, that's Carly Bodrug from Plant You, Will Bolswitz from the Fiber Fueled Cookbook, Robert Cheek, a bunch of other of my friends who have been really successful with their books and who believe in me and who lift me up and teach me the ways. And I feel lucky to have them as friends and cheerleaders as I move down this path. But beyond that, I feel like continuing to reach people with this information. I love reaching people as part of the first step in their plant-based journey. I'm usually the first touch point with plant-based information, and I get to be really understanding and patient and helpful as possible while they learn of other resources and move beyond that first step. And I think it's the coolest, having come from a place in the nonprofit world where I ran social media for organizations. Working with jaded vegan people can be a little bit exhausting. There are lots of complaints, and people believe that what they're doing is the right thing. But coming from that to where I am now and the community I work in now, it's so refreshing, where people are genuinely interested in taking control of their health and in learning how to do basic cooking skills. So it's a pleasurable place to be, and I love it so much.
It's such an amazing opportunity to be that first person to guide someone down their plant-based journey. So it's really incredible that you have that opportunity to do that with literally thousands of people. So that's really cool. I'd love to, like, obviously you run a food brand, you publish several cookbooks. So people naturally think that you love to cook, but in reality, you tend to prefer kind of faster, easier meals. So I know that you're a huge burrito lover. You love making soup and stuff, especially ramen. What are some of your other kind of go-to recipes that you tend to stick with?
I love, I've been loving hummus pizza lately. I've been super duper busy with work and with life. And it's something that requires 5 minutes of prep time. I'll buy a cauliflower crust or something like that from the grocery store, pop it in the oven, bake that for 5 minutes, top it with a lot of hummus, and you can take your pick of the type of hummus. There are so many different flavors, and then top it with a lot of vegetables, and you can do some baked tofu on that. That can be store-bought. If you don't have the time to marinate it yourself, or if you're like me, you can freeze it and marinate it and have it on hand. So it's very easy, very filling. I can eat a whole pizza by myself. It's very good. And it's packed with fresh vegetables, which makes me feel good afterward.
I think everyone, if they're being honest with themselves, can eat a whole pizza by themselves. It's,
yes.
It's hard to beat pizza. So cool.
Agreed.
What are some kind of staple ingredients that you always have on hand? Like when you're going to the grocery store, these are the things that are always on that list.
Always, I have beans and rice. They're both so versatile. My choice of bean is pinto. I grew up eating pinto beans, and it's still my preferred. Plus, it's really easy to cook them if you have an Instant Pot. Or any electric pressure cooker. I have one. There are ways of getting them discounted. I got mine on Amazon. It had a big dent in it. It was $30 off. But they can also be found in Facebook marketplace groups, or Facebook marketplace, or OfferUp, or a lot of used places at a discounted price. I've even seen them in the buy nothing groups. So check them out. It saves so much time on things that I'm about to mention. Lentils, chickpeas, brown rice, quinoa. You can do quinoa in 5 minutes. Those are some staples that live in my pantry. But when we're talking about produce, I also love celery, carrots, onion, garlic for the base of just about everything I ever make. And then on top of that, I love my cruciferous vegetables. I am a big fan of broccoli, broccolini, cauliflower, and I am newer to things like kale. I did not grow up eating kale, but it has found a place in my home, and I've been enjoying that very much.
Would you say that broccoli is now your favorite vegetable, or is there another one that takes the cake?
Ooh. I think it's ever changing. I grow a lot of food in the summer. I grow the majority of what we eat in the summer, and it's constantly changing. Last summer, it was lemon cucumbers. Have you ever had one of those? They're like little, they look like little lemons, but they're cucumbers.
I have not had that yet.
Oh, they're very good. Yeah, if you're ever here during the summer, I'll have to give you one. They're delicious, and I am obsessed with growing fruit. I have a little tiny space. Me and Paul and Eddie, who's our dog, have split up our yard into thirds. I have a third of our little yard. Paul has a third, and Eddie has a third. They really share their two thirds. But in my one third of the yard, I have planted just about as much as I can in the little space. I have planted my trees 3 feet apart from each other, which is not very far. Yeah. But I have 12 fruit trees now, and it's very fun to grow your own produce.
Yeah, that's really cool. So what do Eddie and Paul do with their two-thirds of the yard?
Paul likes to sunbathe, and Eddie likes to Zoom. He does his Zoomies out there.
Okay. And he leaves all of your produce alone?
He won't touch that? Yes, he is not interested. He just wants to hang out in the sun. One time I did catch him when, because I grow from seed a lot of times, when I had little baby seedlings, I saw him laying on one of my garden beds, and I was like, what are you doing? And he didn't do that again. I think he saw my face and was like, well, I don't think I'm supposed to do that.
Yeah, cool. Could you walk us through your typical recipe creation process? I kind of just tend to whip things together. I don't really normally follow recipes, so I'm interested to know kind of how you go through that process.
Okay, well, I have a lot of different things I create recipes for. What is of interest to you? Cookbooks, my websites?
Yes, sorry, specifically cookbooks.
Oh, cookbooks. Okay. For cookbooks, I tend to lean on things that I have a story for, things I grew up eating, things I've really loved recently, and I like to share those anecdotes with my readers and share the food that makes me feel the most comforted. And then I am very inspired by produce, what I grow. There are things that I have not been a fan of, like, it's like a bitter cruciferous vegetable. I can't remember the name of it, but, I keep growing it, and, I will eat it because I grew it, but I don't love it. But I am inspired by new flavors and new textures of produce. And sometimes we'll end up with like 100 pounds of tomatoes or something like that. So I just create as many tomato dishes as possible during that time and think of new ways to put them in a dessert or a salad or even a smoothie or just really unique ways to use this produce. So those are some ways. Then it goes into the recipe testing phase where I work with people who are new cooks, established cooks. They are non-vegetarian or really vegan or don't eat oil or don't eat salt or love salt or eat fast food. Like they're very diverse. And I want to make sure that the recipes, no matter which homes they're in, will be good. And I get a lot of feedback. And if it's a 7 out of 10 or lower average, I'll scrap it. So if it's lower than a 7, I'll scrap it. If it's higher, I'll go look at their feedback, make sure that I incorporate stuff or go back to the drawing board with it and incorporate any of what they said would make it better.
Awesome. Cool. I'd love to talk about kind of the future of veganism a little bit. Obviously, we've seen a tremendous amount of growth in the adoption of plant-based diets over the past few years. You've been vegan over a decade yourself. How do we bridge the gap between where we are now and a future where most people don't eat meat?
Well, I hope that that's the truth. I really do. My husband is very big on data and sometimes shares that per capita, we are increasing our meat consumption. And that can feel discouraging. But I feel like if we stay our course and keep inspiring people, we can change the way the world is moving, or the way the world is. And I have seen that in my own family, in my own community, and in the media. I'm going to a restaurant is so much easier. They know how to pronounce the word vegan. They know what vegan means. They don't try to serve me lamb or fish because I say I'm vegan. So if that continues on, I feel positively and I am very hopeful.
Yeah, me too. I tend to think that we're going to see a pretty serious shift in the economics of meat over the coming decade. I know that's heavily kind of aligned with what your husband is doing. And I'd actually love for you to just share a little bit about what he's doing at the Better Meat Company.
He is creating an alternative protein that is fungi based and it is delicious. They are a B2B company that works with they work with both meat companies, but also plant-based companies to either lessen the meat in a meat product. I think that one of their biggest SKUs or products is taking a chicken nugget that was once 100% chicken and now making it 50% chicken. And it recently won Food Network's number one chicken nugget in the country. So getting consumers to eat 50% less meat without making the conscious choice, like having to think about it, is really impactful in helping animals, which is a big goal of ours.
I actually didn't know that that was such a initiative. That's really cool. That's an awesome kind of underground way of accomplishing this move towards more plant-based eating. So yeah, I love the work that both of you are doing. So I know that you're coming out with this cookbook. I'd love for you to talk through what this kind of launch experience has been for you, what you're really excited about here, and just talk more about what this cookbook is all about.
Thank you. I have a cookbook called Plant-Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy coming out. And it's the first cookbook that I have resources to make it exactly what I want. And when I came out with the book this is a follow-up to, it was called Plant-Based on a Budget. It was very bare bones. I didn't have the money. I did everything myself except the food photography, which I hired someone who was a friend for a very small amount of money. She moved in with me. I made all the recipes within 5 days, 100 recipes in 5 days, and did all the dishes. Like, I was just like, woo, woo, woo. It was very, very, very taxing, but I'm proud of it. It has done well, and it has allowed me to be in a position now where I can create a book that I really super love and am proud of. With the Plant-Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy cookbook, the biggest difference is that it is a book that's more focused on how to save time in the kitchen. With the first one, I tried to save as much money. Therefore, I cooked everything from scratch, and that can be a little bit time consuming. But if you are someone who either has an opportunity to make the balance of, I want to save money here and I want to save time here, or I just want to save as much time as possible, this is a good book because I show you how to make your time in the kitchen most efficient, how to double batch, how to freeze, how to do things in your Instant Pot so that while your dinner is cooking, you can go walk your dog or play with your kids or whatever. So that's the biggest difference. There are photos with every recipe. Dr. Greger wrote the foreword, which is always is just an honor. There's a lot of space to make these recipes your own by writing it in the My Tips section. And that's how I learned how to cook, by following other people's recipes as a guide and writing in how I modified them for my own taste and budget and based on what I had at home on hand. And I want that for the people who use my recipes as well.
Yeah, I love all of that. So the My Tip section is saying, hey, the recipe might have spinach, but you could also use kale, or we could change the brown rice to white rice, or those are the kind of substitutions you're talking. Those are kind of the tips that you're talking about, right?
Exactly. Or if you love putting chili powder in your tofu scramble, and that's you've measured it, and it this much added makes it your jam, then that's what you would write in, that you've measured it and adding 1/2 teaspoon of chili powder will make this exceptionally better. In addition to that, so I start off with a base recipe. It's very plain, but then I have the optional addition section. And if you have more money, because this is a budget focused book, if you have money to spend, or if you have these things on hand and you don't have to go spend the money, this would make the recipe a lot better, in my opinion. And then there's a space for you to write in your own additions as well.
That's a really cool addition. So I've already pre-ordered my copy. It looks absolutely beautiful. I'm looking forward to getting it. You mentioned, first of all, going through the process of taking photos with 100 recipes over 5 days. That is absolutely crazy. We've done a lot of nutrition videos recently on our YouTube channel, and people severely underestimate, or at least I did, how much work goes on behind the scenes for one, like prepping all the food, but then the dishes afterwards, like going through and cleaning all that and making sure you have clean dishes for future recipes that you're going to be working on. It's just it's a really taxing process.
Yes. And the first time, if you don't clean right away, the first time I did it, we got ants. So as I was trying to plate everything, cook everything, clean all the dishes, I also had to figure out what I was going to do with all the ants that decided to come and live with us. So it is a challenge. And with this book, I actually got to work with the person who's on my staff now for food photography, and he is so exceptional. His story is fantastic. He is an immigrant from Peru. He was a friend of my husband's, and when he graduated college, also later on, like I did, he had a camera and had never done food photography. He was a landscape photographer and real estate photographer. But my husband was like, he needs a job. You should try to see what you can do. And I was like, food photography and food styling is a skill. I've been doing this for a long time, still can't master it. So I don't know. I'll talk to him. And I talked to him. He did some good work up front. I gave him a bunch of free resources to look into. And now that was in 2019, and now we're in 2023. And he is so good. He is a hard worker and nailed my vision.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so important to have people like that on your team. And that's what I look at when we're bringing new people onto our team. Does this person have a can-do, roll-up-our-sleeves, figure-it-out attitude? That's the most important part from my perspective.
Yes, and he is that way. He will roll up his sleeves. He will do anything. He's not above washing the dishes. He's the talent, and also helps me clean up the floor when we're finished. So I really appreciate his hard work. His name is Alfonso.
Awesome. So what are some of do you have any personal favorite recipes from your new cookbook that you're just extra excited about?
I really like the sopa de fideo. It's a Mexican dish that I grew up eating. My grandma used to make it. I made it a little bit different than she made hers. I made it dairy free, but it is just as good. It has what is like angel hair pasta that's been broken up in a tomato sauce base. It's like soupy with vegetable broth. I use the no chicken better than bouillon, which provides a lot of flavor. And then I put things like zucchini and black beans and onions and garlic. And you can even put more vegetables if you wanted. But when I eat it, I'm transported back into my childhood, and it makes me feel comforted.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, as I said, I've already pre-ordered your book. I can't wait to go through and check out your recipes. I am all about quick and easy meals. So if you are as well, this recipe book was literally made for you. So it's 100 fast, healthy, meal prep, freezer friendly, and one pot vegan recipes. And it comes out on March 7th. And you can go ahead and pre-order it on Amazon. I don't know if you can pre-order it other places, but Amazon
anywhere.
Anywhere?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You can go to plantbasedonabudgetcookbook.com. I have a ton of pre-order incentives there, and you can see where you can buy the copy.
Cool. All right. So yeah, if you want some quick and easy plant-based meals that are also budget-friendly, this is a great cookbook for you to check out, and pre-orders will really help Tony to continue spreading this message and reaching new people. So how else can our listeners support your work beyond the cookbook?
You can come find me at Instagram at plantbasedonabudget.com, and if you want, you can find recipes and those meal plans at plantbasedonabudget.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's been an honor speaking with you, Tony. So great to get to know you more, and really appreciate you taking the time to hop on the podcast and talk through your story.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome. To get access to some of our best content for free, head over to thevegangym.com. We've got tons of articles and guides to help you burn stubborn body fat, build lean muscle, and supercharge your health. You can even use our vegan nutrition calculator for free to figure out how much protein, calories, and micronutrients your body needs. Get started right now at thevegangym.com.